Hey guys, I'm Paul Bates, and this is the Fermentation Podcast. Join me on this journey to put fermentation into practice, create culture, and revive this lost art that connects all of us to our cultures of the past. Today is Wednesday, August 6, 2014, and this is episode number 6. All right, today I want to go over permaculture. This has been a topic I've talked about before, or kind of mentioned it, but I want to go a little more in-depth today on why I think this is important and how this relates to fermentation. I think if you guys get a better understanding for permaculture, it could truly change your lives for the better and help you understand how nature and the world actually works. It also gives you a great eye for design and how you can incorporate this into your life. And like one of my mentors, Jeff Lawton, likes to say, all of the world's problems can be solved in a garden. So before I get into that, everything I talk about on today's show will be in the show notes at fermentationpodcast.com. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, email me at paul@fermentationpodcast.com or just go to the website and click on the contact button on the top. You can also connect to me on Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, and Twitter. Just go to fermentationpodcast.com and you should see the links in the sidebar. So to get right into the topic, what exactly is permaculture? I mean, what is this thing that I keep mentioning here and there? I know you've heard me mention it on a couple other episodes, but what exactly is this thing called permaculture that I keep talking about? And why is it important? You know, what does it have to do with fermentation? So to start, permaculture is a system of design. So it's more of like a design science, and it provides for all the needs of humanity. And at the same time, it benefits the environment. So you can just imagine that just by being human and going about your normal human life with your normal human activities, you can actually have a positive influence on your environment rather than a destructive one. And permaculture was created back in the late 1970s by two Australians named Bill Mollison and David Holmgren. So when it comes to sustainability, we could definitely learn a thing or two from the Australians because they have pioneered this system. And to start breaking down the core concepts of permaculture, it starts with the three ethics. That's care of the earth, care of people, and return of surplus back to the first two, so like a reinvestment. And when Bill Mollison first started thinking about this permaculture concept and this system, he thought there had to be some kind of a backbone that would drive this system and that would keep it in check, like a checks and balances. And that's what the three ethics are supposed to be, along with something called the prime directive. And what the prime directive states is the only ethical decision is to take responsibility for our own existence and that of our children. And I think fermentation is a great place to start putting some of these permaculture principles and concepts to use. I mean, you're actually taking an active role of getting away from the industrialized model of agriculture and, you know, getting away from industrialized fake food. You're actually doing something for yourself and your family. So if you have children, you know, they learn by example. If you start showing them this process of turning waste into something useful and some of the ethics like caring for the earth, caring for people, reinvesting your hard work to create more abundance, then you're actually taking responsibility for yourself and giving them a role model of the right way to do things. And then, you know, you can be sure that they're going to pass that information down onto the next generation and the next generation. The culture is just moving on into the future. It's almost like you reach out in time and hand off something of value rather than, you know, stealing abundance from future generations like so many systems nowadays end up at. Okay, permaculture combines three key aspects. Number one, it's an ethical framework. Number two, it focuses on observation to understand how nature works and natural processes function. And number three, which is more concrete, it has a design approach. So the first one there, the ethical framework, I think when you have a system that starts off with ethics and is built on ethics, you end up with a stronger system in the end because it puts limits on what you will and won't do. Kind of like you're not going to spray your fields with chemicals and you're not going to rototill all the time. So then on top of that, if you can sit back and observe something, it gives you the chance to figure out what exactly are you looking at? What's going on? How does a landscape change over time? And then that all contributes to making a stronger design for yourself. And when it finally comes time to make your design and put your project onto paper, you can take the ethics into account, you can take all your observations into account, and bring everything together in your master plan. So when permaculture first started off, you can think about the word permaculture as permanent agriculture. But then eventually people started realizing that it was much more than that and you could carry on culture to the next generation. So then it turned more into a permanent culture rather than permanent agriculture. And permaculture, it's based in positivism and solutions. So I think a lot of people started realizing, rather than going out and protesting, like with Occupy Wall Street and all that, it really doesn't do anything to solve the problems that you're protesting about. So rather than focusing all of your actions on negative action, you can turn that around and focus all of your energy into one positive solution that's actually going to be around for a while and solve the problem that you're so worried about. So being based in a more positive arena and being more solutions focused, some of the ideas under that would be working with nature rather than against it. And I've heard it said on, I think it was the Permaculture Orchard video, if you take one step towards nature, nature will take 10 steps towards you. And I'm sure the opposite is also true. So if you're taking steps away from nature, it's going to just run away from you also. Another idea in this area is something that Bill Mollison repeats over and over in his Permaculture Designer's Manual, something that Jeff Lawton says all the time, and that's the problem is the solution. And that sounds kind of ethereal or more philosophical, but when you start putting that into practice, the problem is the solution, you start to see things in a different way. And another way of saying that would be, in the problem lies the solution. So you could have a problem, and that problem could actually be a solution to something else. And some examples of that is, say you have an area on your property that gets kind of soggy, there's more water there, almost like a bog. That would be a great place to put a pond. Or say you have a wall against your house that it just gets too hot. Say it's more like on the west side. It gets that really hot afternoon sun and it just heats up that thermal mass. That would be a great place to put frost-sensitive plants, because the thermal mass will heat up and during the night it'll radiate all that heat to that plant. And at the same time, the plant will provide shade, cooling that part of the house. And say you have plants in your area that become invasive. And a lot of people just get scared with invasive plants because they think they're going to take over the area. But if you have invasive plants, that just means you have a plant that will just thrive in your area. And you can actually use that to your advantage. So say you have a plant that's just growing out of control. Every month or every couple weeks, just chop and drop that thing. It becomes a great mulch plant for other plants. And a lot of times, some of those worst invasive plants, they're actually nutrient accumulators. So they'll actually mine all those nutrients in the soil, bring it up to the surface, and then when you chop and drop those, it becomes fertilizer for plants surrounding it. So you can chop and drop underneath fruit trees. A great one of those would be comfrey. And I actually grow several comfrey plants, so I can chop those. Sometimes I'll put it in a blender, blend it up, and almost make like a green smoothie that I can pour on other plants as a liquid fertilizer rather than going out and buying fertilizers. So if you just change the way you think and make the problem the solution, you might start to see the world in a completely different view. And finally, there's so many different ideas when it comes to permaculture, but just another one that I'll throw in there that Bill Mollison talks about is make the least change for the greatest effect. So if you can just do one little thing that makes a gigantic impact, try to focus on those first. All right, so I've mentioned some of the ideas in permaculture, but just to bring you through the 14 chapters of the Permaculture Designer's Manual by Bill Mollison, I just wanted to list those out just to see what's actually taught and how much it actually encompasses. So going through the 14 chapters, there's the introduction, of course, concepts and themes in design, methods of design, pattern understanding, climatic factors, trees and their energy transactions, water, soils, earthworks, the humid tropics, dry land strategies, humid cool to cold climates, aquaculture, and strategies of an alternative global nation. So once you go through a PDC or a permaculture design course or a permaculture design certificate course, and understand these chapters, you'll start to see how genius the system is. And when it comes to understanding and designing complex systems, permaculture can give you a great system to use to build that framework for a robust, strong, resilient system. So now that I've given you kind of an overview of what permaculture is about, what in the world does this have to do with fermentation, you're probably thinking. All right, so let's just start with the three ethics. So take care of the earth. In permaculture, the earth consists of organisms and life, and every single life has an inherent value, including microorganisms like the bacteria, the fungus, the yeast, that actually do all of these fermentations. And caring for these creatures that are working so hard for you just makes perfect sense, because if you can harness their natural functions, you can create some amazing things that you normally wouldn't be able to do by yourself because you're partnering with nature. And when you're caring and nurturing these organisms, you're not going to be using chemicals like chlorine that's in tap water, or using unsustainable practices that's going to hurt your cultures, because you want a good final product, a good culture that you can continue on. And the exact same thing goes for care of people as it would for microorganisms. So if you start with high quality ingredients that are nutrient dense, your health is going to get a boost, you're going to be tasting these amazing flavors. And permaculture focuses more on polycultures and tries to get away from the monocultures. So think of like a cornfield and that's all there is, or a soybean field and that's all there is as far as you can see. Obviously, that can't be healthy for the plants. And the same thing goes for your body. So if you're consuming lots of different cultures, and it's a varied type of a culture, the stronger and more robust the cultures in your body will become. And that means you're going to have better digestion, ultimately making you stronger. And then on the last ethic, how that actually applies to fermentation, return of surplus back to the first two ethics. When you make a culture of something, you keep a little bit of it, which is the starter to get the next generation going. So say you have a little bit of kombucha left over, or a little bit of sourdough, or something like that. That's your surplus, but you're going to use that and reinvest it back into the culture so you can just keep that culture going. So you can see the permaculture model and the ethics, that completely applies to fermentation. And really, it applies to every part of your life if you just embrace that model. And permaculture, permanent culture. Since you're partnering with nature, you're making your food last way longer than it otherwise should have. And I'm sure somebody a long time ago, they probably had something like a ceramic pot or something like that, and they were storing their vegetables in it, and then decided to put water over it, or who knows, maybe even it rained. And then a couple days later, they noticed it bubbling, and maybe they even just decided, oh, I'll taste that, see what it tastes like, and then it tasted good. Who knows? I don't know where it started in people's minds that you could start doing this, but it was a long time ago. And one fact of human culture is that fermentation has always been there. It's always been with us, and it's always been a way to connect to our ancestors and carry on the practices that they've taught us. And a lot of the different common ferments that you even know of today, fermentation becomes an identity for different cultures around the world. So just a few examples would be Russian kvass, or Jewish pickles, or Polish sausages, or even German sauerkraut, which in German literally means sour cabbage. So fermentation is establishing a permanent culture around the world, which is why I love permaculture. It seems like it fits so well with the subject. And some of the other reasons I think this fits in so well with fermentation is because, say you have a homestead or you're starting up a garden or something like that, if you're using the permaculture methodology, you're going to be growing high-quality, nutrient-dense food way better than, you know, what you would normally get in a store. So you're going to be getting better nutrition, it's more easily absorbed by your body, and you know the phrase, less is more. You're actually going to be able to eat less and gain more vitamins, minerals, and nutrients. And if you start with these kind of foods and your fermentations, they're going to be so much better than, you know, something that you would buy. And other things, like I always reiterate, is the amazing flavor. It's always going to taste better if you're starting with high quality things. Another reason would be you're going to reduce your waste because you're recycling nutrients. There's a nutrient cycle. If you think about all the different types of foods you eat, they all contain nutrients. And if you can keep those nutrients in the nutrient cycle and just keep them recycling over and over and over again, you're never going to waste anything. And everything has a function or an inherent value. So even that little bit of nutrition that you'd normally throw away in the garbage, you'd be recycling that into your compost pile, and then that grows something else that's even better. And you might even get something better than you've originally started with because you're putting more nutrition and more nutrients into that plant that it can start growing. All right, so I've told you about permaculture, you know some of the ideas now. Maybe you're excited and you want to know how you can actually get started. I mean, where can you learn about some of this stuff? And I would say if you have the money and you really want to invest your time in learning into something that's going to change your life and make you look at the world in a totally different way, I would say take a PDC. So take a permaculture design certificate course. And you can either take those in person or you can do like I did, take an online one. And one of the best online ones I know of is Jeff Lawton's of the Permaculture Research Institute of Australia. He has a great one. Just go to jefflawton.com with a G. Another one that's just starting up, the Survival Podcast of Jack Spirico. He's just starting an online one with his Perma Ethos project. If you want to get more of like a hands-on kind of a thing, there's Midwest Permaculture with Bill Wilson. And it's, you know, all of these are supposed to be 72-hour courses. You can also search locally for a PDC, but make sure it's more focused on the science of it and not these crazy ideas of the energy of the land and all this nonsense. You need one that actually focuses on the science and the practicalities and the actual topics that are covered in the Permaculture Designer's Manual. That's what these are actually supposed to cover, the 14 chapters of Bill Mollison's Permaculture, a Designer's Manual. And you can also even find some free permaculture courses online, but you always get what you pay for. If you take a high-quality online course, you're going to get all of these really amazing videos, and they show you exactly how to do everything. And some of these even incorporate aerial drones where you can see a land overhead and see the different shapes and forms and see a swale, you know, jetting out for a half of a mile, or what a dam looks like before and after construction, and what you're actually looking for in the landscape. So that's actually how to get involved and take a PDC or find a PDC locally to you. Now, for some examples of something really impressive of what permaculture can accomplish, which is what got me interested in the first place, I'll put a link in the show notes to this, but it's a project called Greening the Desert by Jeff Lawton in 2001. And this took place in the Middle East in a country named Jordan, one of the lowest places on Earth. So it was 400 meters below sea level. It was a 10-acre area. It was almost completely flat. It was very, very salted. And it was about 2 kilometers from the Dead Sea and extremely hot at 50 degrees Celsius or 122 degrees Fahrenheit at some of the hot points. So this is a desert. This is like the worst you can possibly start with. And people in the area using conventional methods and conventional practices, they were working under plastic hoop houses, they were spraying chemicals, using synthetic fertilizers, and overgrazing their animals. Well, Jeff Lawton took on this project, and he wanted to prove that permaculture could work, and permaculture could work anywhere. And if it could work in a desert, it really could work anywhere. So what he did is he went in, made a design to capture as much water as he possibly could in the flood season, and he used huge swales. And a swale is just a level ditch on contour, so it's a level ditch that actually flows with the contours of the land. To reduce evaporation and keep the moisture inside, he put as much mulch as he could on the swales. He installed micro-irrigation underneath and a drip water line to keep it from evaporating off. And then he installed very hardy nitrogen-fixing trees to repair the soil by capturing the nitrogen from the atmosphere. And then it pushed it into the ground so the next generation of plants could use that nitrogen. And those trees also provided shade, further reducing evaporation. It also buffered the wind, and that also reduced evaporation. So this is just some of the permaculture strategies that he put into practice and put into use. And within 4 months, he had figs 3 feet high with figs on the trees, which people said was impossible, and he must have washed the salt through the soil. But they were telling him, you know, we're using 1/5 the amount of water that people normally use in this area. And the soil was actually becoming desalted. And the reason was they were using these hardy trees that captured the salt and locked it up. So if you can get these amazing results in this completely hot, arid desert, I think if you start putting these ideas and principles into your own landscapes, you can get these amazing results. I think it's definitely worth a look. So just to wrap up, permaculture is a design science based in ethics and positivism geared towards solutions. It's a troubleshooting kind of a science that you can use to build a strong, resilient life for yourself, your community, and your family. And if you want to have a more resilient life, this can definitely make your life more resilient. It can give you the ability to focus on your own culture to pass on to your next generation, just as microbes live to pass on their culture to their next generation. If you start to bring the problem is the solution into your own life, you might actually start finding a lot more solutions in your life than you might have even realized. So say you notice a ferment that's going a certain way and you observe and interact, you could possibly realize that you might have found a new culture that gives a certain quality to a ferment, and maybe you can use that elsewhere. And also, this is all supposed to be fun. Jeff Lawton says, if you're not having fun, then your design is wrong. The one big thing about permaculture that I really like is it helps you understand the natural world, and that even translates into the microbial world. So if you understand these concepts and put them to use, you can actually make some of the best ferments out there. And I'm sure you've heard it before, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you start with high quality ingredients that are actually created by enhancing the world around you, you're doing just that little bit to make the world a better place, one ferment at a time. So everything I've covered on today's show will be in the show notes. And of course, I always invite you guys to come out to fermentationpodcast.com. Leave me some comments or, you know, some feedback on today's show. And let me know what you think, or if you just have any questions. Also, don't forget to subscribe to get updates by new shows and blog posts by email. This has been Paul Bates encouraging you to change your life, ferment responsibly, and get out there and create some culture with permaculture.